Bob is your uncle.
And we're all set to say hello to Martin Miller.
Hello.
And which we're recording. So tell us all about yourself. How did you get into this business? How did you go out and develop your own gin?
Wow.
It is gin, right?
It is gin.
Okay.
I think a lot of things in life come about by accident, and this particular one was an accident over a long lunch. Always been a gin fan and was getting bored with the gins that were on offer, especially the gins that they did in the English pub, which they could crucify, you know, to their best advantage. You know, it was, you know, cheap gin, tonic from a gun, one bit of ice if you're lucky, and a bit of marinated lime. That was it. And so I had a conversation. We just started thinking, oh, well, let's do a really good gin that we actually like and that we're proud of. And it was very much, you know, for our own consumption mainly. And then we thought, well, we'll put it out there and see if other people like it and appreciate it. And then it just started moving very slowly. It's 13 years ago now, so we're, you know, going back quite a long way with it. It's been a real slow burner.
And how large has it gotten?
Well, we're now just hitting worldwide our 100,000 case, which is a respectable amount.
100,000 cases a year.
A year, yeah.
Right.
And only it was it's good enough. we're doing, not obviously America is a massive market for us, and we're really just starting to explore America, which is in itself a mammoth task. Right. But you know, you're a great cocktail culture here. And we know that the gin is a good base. Always used to be the great, you know, cocktails were
sure.
gin-based.
Sure.
And then vodka came along, you know, and sort of the young upstart came in and took the high ground. But I think that's on the way now, because people are appreciating gin again.
Well, and vodka came in about 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, because drink fashion has changed with the generations, it's
Absolutely.
Time for something else to come
yes,
in. And
yes.
the obvious alternative.
Yes,
white spirit.
Everyone's looking for the new, the new sort of, and I think gin is ready for a resurgence. And it had such a bad reputation because everyone used to say it was a depressive, and it was only a depressive because it was made badly. You know, I mean, early gins were just, you know, and I think if you do a quality operation, then, you know, you've got a pure enough spirit that's not going to give you any nonsense.
So what makes the difference between your gin and your competitors?
Well, we have, I think, two unique elements. One is the fact that we use Icelandic water, which people think is a bit of a gimmick, but actually it's not. There is a lot of reasons, and actually if you want to speak to David afterwards, he's the man who really can give you the, you know, the nuts and bolts of what it is. But basically it's got something like 5 or 6 parts per million minerals in it, so it's a really low, very, very pure water. And the other part is that we do a sort of a dual distillation process, where we actually distill the actual earthy botanicals in one, and then all the lime and orange and everything goes in another, and then they're blended afterwards. So those are the two things which, and also we use only the heart of the spirit, you know, whereas the first out and the last out is where there's a lot of nasties,
right.
which tend to go into white label or something else. So we don't, or they redistill them, something of that nature. But we don't do that. We just, you know, we just take the heart,
and, take the middle part.
Which makes it expensive. You know, the fact is that it's expensive to send it over and to put it with Icelandic water. It's expensive because we're only taking the heart of it. But that's the only way you're going to get a quality. You know, there's no shortcut, unfortunately. And so we ended up with a sort of basically what we call a sort of super premium brand, only because that was, you know, the way it worked out. It wasn't to make a good gin, it cost a lot of money, and it cost a lot of money. If you want to sell it, you've got to sell it for a price that's going to cover yourselves. So, you know,
so it's a top shelf gin.
It is, yeah. But you know, I always say, you know, why pay less? Some of those silly things, you know. But
there are plenty of people around, even in the depressed economy we're all suffering with, that can afford it.
I mean, funnily enough, you know, we're doing incredibly well in Spain, where it's a very expensive, and that's probably nearly our biggest market.
Really?
And that's a pretty depressed economy.
It certainly is.
You know, so they're obviously, I think quite often in those things, that they just want, if they're going to drink and that, they'll do something good. You know, they'll, you know.
Now, how long have you been in the U.S.? Is this your introductory tour?
No, we've actually been here for probably, I don't know, 8 or 9 years. Uh-huh. But the distribution has been very erratic, you know, because every state has its something which, and we've never really...
We make Europe look good in that respect.
Oh, yeah,
when it
comes
to alcohol.
The doddle. You really do. But no, it's been here, but obviously what we really want to do now, because, you know, we're now getting to become a sort of, especially in Europe, and that a pretty established brand, and we've been winning quite a lot of competitions. We know we've got a great product, so now we're sort of trying to start moving it through here, and, you know, and that's hence, you know, we're here trying to move, you know, from sort of state to state and do small events and start hopefully the, you know, the because it's all basically you've got to get people trying the if they like it, then you're there, and they've got to know what they're tasting. Mm-hmm. And if they don't do that, you can't, where do you start, really?
Then you're in deep trouble.
Yeah. And we do fine. And I know in England, I got some hotels in England, and I'm really bad. We only pour Martin Miller's gin. And people say, well, I'm, you know, so, well, I'm sorry, you know, but if you don't like it, we won't charge you. And we had an event recently where there were 30-odd people staying in the hotel. They all took away a bottle of gin with them. Because they're not just being polite.
Right.
You know, when people are polite, oh, you know, maybe I will because you've been talking, I wasn't even there.
Right.
So there was no impact. But you know then that those people are actually enjoying the product. And it was, you know, no pressure. We didn't actually officially sell it. And those are things which make you feel that you're actually achieving something when people, you know, have had it for 2 or 3 days, enjoyed it, and, you know, the easiest place for them to buy it was where they were, and off they went with it.
Sure. Now, what did you do before you developed this gin?
Well, my early life was very much involved with antiques, and mm-hmm. I've sold them about 15 years ago. They were called Miller's Antiques Price Guides, and we did really well, and they're still available in the States. And they were in England, they were the best-selling antiques price guide at the time, 250,000 copies a year, and they were very successful. So they were something which, you know, did a lot of, but they're an awful lot of work compared to, you know, the drinks industry, because of that publishing, when we were doing 4 yearbooks every year, 800-page yearbooks that had to be created from scratch. There's a lot of work involved in there. Great thing, once you've produced a gin, at least you can say, please, sir, can I have another 10,000 cases? you haven't got to reinvent the wheel every time.
Right. That's very interesting. Sounds like I should have talked to you 30 years ago.
I should have talked to myself 30 years ago. I wouldn't have had all that. They were very successful things, but, you know, when I think of, you know, the hours, you know, and days, and, you know, I mean, I've got sort of that's a, you know, another story. You know, it's always saying if we knew now,
what we knew then.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Now, so I gather that when you actually came up with the idea of developing a better quality gin, you were, you know, as they say in the theater, at liberty.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes. So when we that time in England, there was really maybe half a dozen gins around. No one was drinking gin.
Right.
They were really sort of not on anyone's radar. It was, as you said, vodka, vodka, vodka. So it wasn't as if we thought there was a big commercial market for it, but we thought there would have been a market, so that we could do a limited run and maybe make, you know, a couple of thousand cases and sell them some round top end bars in London and put someone on the road and just, you know, start it off slowly. It was a very slow. It took us nearly 2 years to get the actual taste right to actually do the, because we have, you know, distillation after distillation. But once we got there and we were happy with what we had, then, you know, we just need to go slowly. You know, it wasn't going to be a business, really, in that respect. You know, it was a little thing we tried out, and we said, let's have a rep on the road, and, you know, then, you know, one thing led to another and to another, and now it's, you know, now it's moving into, it's in England, we're probably the 5th or 6th best-selling gin, you know, and that's quite something. You know,
because
most of them go with all the big boys, so that's the, you know, that's always been the issue. You know, they've got the resource.
They have the resource.
But they don't always get it right, because I'm sure you'll know well how many failures there are in the industry. You know,
a lot, yeah.
It's a lot, unfortunately. And I mean, obviously, for us, one day it would be, you know, our intention, probably in time, for, you know, to actually be taken over by one, because that's the only way you really make your money out long term. You know,
yeah.
So it's
There's only two ways to make your money. One is that you start a company and you grow it up very big and very fast, and all of that. And the other is that, you know, you, at some point, you sell out to one of the big guys,
and they
take it over.
And hopefully they have the resource, and at least what's unlikely to happen is for them to change the product, because that's something, you know, once you've got to, like we have, the gin as it is, it would be very unlikely that anyone who did buy it would change it. So you know sure. It's always there, because why would they buy something that wasn't broken?
Exactly.
And play with it in any way. You know? So in that respect, you know that what you've done is going to be probably, you know, sort of kept in existence. Unless they think it's so wonderful they shut it down. Because it would affect another brand they might have, but that's not likely to happen.
Well, sometimes that happens too.
Yes, I know. Yeah,
but usually they don't deliberately shut it down.
No.
Sort of do it by ineptitude.
Yes, that's right. Yes. Yeah.
So, I guess you were an original craft distiller then.
Oh no, I'm certainly not. No,
you sound like all the craft people I know. They all start out doing something else.
Well, we are a craft in that respect, you know. I suppose, but not that I wasn't hands-on in that respect, because I've never done any of the, you know, I've obviously been to this and all the rest of it. And we found a small distillery with a sort of 150-year-old still. And, you know, we said to, you know, the sort of master distiller, you know, what we really want to do is make a great gin. And what happens with most of these people, they're never given the chance to get involved, because someone comes along with them, they all say, well, this is what we want, this is our recipe, and off you go
and go off and do it.
But they, you know, and they actually, I think, responded to the fact that let's work together, and it took us, you know, I don't know how many distillations, sort of every 6 weeks we had another six or eight distillations come through in little numbered bottles which we were trying and everything. So it did take a long time, and there were a lot of elements which David would tell you about that actually refined it as we went. So
sure.
You know, we're not just seeing it's like the Icelandic water, it's not just a gimmick. We'd love not to use Icelandic water because it's expensive, but doesn't work without it.
But that's part of it.
There are, you know, elements to it which make it important, and you know, we're stuffed with that one. Unfortunately, it was a great plus, but you know, we're caught with it.
Sure. So, who's your distributor here in the U.S.? Who's your employer?
We have various distributors.
Different ones?
Different ones, yes. So it's sort of, it's really state by state.
State by state.
I think we're Prestige here.
Prestige, sure.
Yeah.
And how many states are you in, do you know?
I think we're in most of them, somewhere or other. It's like Washington, 7 or 8 years ago, we were doing very well in Washington. And then we were under Campari. They were looking after our distribution. And then there was just, they weren't, then it suddenly just didn't work for us with them. It wasn't really happening, and they were going off and doing other things. And then it sort of, it fell apart in Washington. And now I've got, you know, because I say my wife was from here. And so she has friends here. I always kept saying, you know, well, we always used to get it, but now we can't get it in any of the sort of, you know, the liquor stores. And I think that will change now, because that's one of the things which will. But so I'm sure you know, you can sell it in, but you've got to sell it out.
Right.
And you only sell it out if people know to ask for it and have.
Exactly.
That's the expensive part of the operation.
Right.
Getting people to know you exist. And that's why the massive, you know, operators can do that, because they can whack a, you know, $5-10 million advertising campaign out there, give it a go, and if the product's good enough, then it will probably succeed. Or, as you know, 9 out of 10 really are not.
Right.
And they fade away because they stop promoting them. You know, and that's it. So it's that selling through which is so important. And the only way, you know, on the, you know, the offer that we can sell through is that people have it as their gin of choice at home.
Sure.
And then they introduce it to their friends. You know, if you go around for a gin, oh, that's, you know, what is it? And this is it. We just discover. And everyone likes to make a discovery. You know, they always think it's something that's not, that the world hasn't seen it yet. You know,
exactly.
So it's our little treasure. You know, and have
yes.
you tried this new whatever? It's anything in life. You know, they love to sort of.
Yeah. And of course, one of the big mistakes that some people do is they start out and they become our little discovery. Then they decide, well, we can, you know, quadruple this, or, you know, tentuple it, maybe.
Yes.
And then they become a big mass brand.
But that's who they become, you know, sort of, yes, hoisted by their own success, really.
Yeah.
But then at least they got the money to, you know, to compensate.
Exactly.
For that one, I think. That,
exactly. So you've been doing this for how long now?
We started in 13 years, yes, 1998, 1999.
And you're based in?
We're based in London. Is our main base. That's where it all happens. Yes, in Fulham, out of London, where we've got the offices. Then they've got some offices in Miami as well. But
right.
You know, that's the base for Europe.
I'm in London, not out in Lancs or someplace.
I'm in London, but I've actually also got I got some, 4 hotels in England, which are down in the West Country. I don't know if you, do you know England very well.
Not well.
But they're in the West Country.
So you not only do gin, but you do hotels.
I do some hotels. Yeah, that's my hobby. You know, you don't make any money out of hotels, really.
No, well, Marriott's done all right.
Yeah, but they're. I play with filling mine with antiques and putting them in places that no one can get to.
Oh, okay.
You know, so I've sort of got a sort of, you know, sort of a strange way of doing my hotels. Really, they're very destination. I mean, it's cities. I mean, like Washington. I mean, they can't go wrong when you're into a city like this at the top end level. So that's my other. And then I got an art gallery. And I do some art and this nature, which I am, you know, I sort of.
How do you find time to do all this?
Delegation.
Aha.
Yeah. Well, I say it sounds easy, but.
Well, it's not, I know.
It's not really.
Because I'm a lousy delegator.
Well, I used to be really bad, but I'm getting much better. And I think what you always have to do is you have to accept a different level.
Sure.
You know, because if you start thinking of how you could have done it, and you go potty. And then sometimes you find things that happen so much better because you're not involved, because they've been given the responsibility, and, you know, because when you're working with them, they don't make that much effort. Mm-hmm. But if you leave them alone, suddenly they can blossom, which is, you know, it's a fun thing, especially with the hotel industry, because that's a 24/7 people only.
Well, it certainly sounds like you're having a great time.
They're all good industries, if you want, businesses or activities to be involved in. I like dipping from one to another.
Sure.
You know, which is, to me, is the best thing out, because you get to sit on one thing all the time and you get a bit jaded, really.
Right. Well, good. This has been great.
Wow.
Is there anything I should have asked you that I didn't? Because I think they're about getting ready for you to perform over there.
Oh, no, I'm done, I think.
Oh, you're done?
Yes. I don't know if there's anything, really, that I need to tell you.
What have you covered? I'll give you extra questions. What have you already covered?
Well, we covered most things,
We've
I think.
We've covered almost everything, yeah.
Yes. I've been...
We've talked about where he came from, what he does, what else he does, how he developed this.
Yes, you don't want to talk about trillions of children and 14 ex-wives.
How he wishes he didn't have to use... Icelandic water.
Yeah, Icelandic water, yes, the bane of our lives. But there it is.
Well, at least you're benefiting from global warming because the water is melting in Iceland.
Yes, but our water doesn't actually come from the glacier. So that doesn't even help us. We can't say we just float in an iceberg and put it in the sun. That wouldn't work.
Hook up an iceberg and tow it down.
Yes,
to the
that's right. But, you know, we did have these strange ideas when we were sort of doing early days of saying, wouldn't it be a fun thing to bring an iceberg down the Thames? Then we looked at how much it might cost to bring an iceberg, and the fun sort of went out the window.
Sobered you up real fast.
Yeah, too right, yes, yeah.
Okay, good.
Then carve it into a bottle of gin.
Exactly.
Anyway, thoughts.
Well, this has been a great interview. I appreciate your time.
No, thank you very much. Thank you for coming.
You know, I'm glad that things are working well for you.
Yes, yes. No, it's very encouraging.
You've got 100,000 cases now, I guess you'd like to get to 200,000.
Yes, that would be very nice.
When do you think you might do that?
Well, I would think 2 to 3 years it's achievable, because we've got so many markets where we haven't really, you know, explored.
Right.
And we're now getting, we're doing stuff in, especially, you know, going to Beijing or in supermarket in Kuala Lumpur, and... you know, we've got a lot of markets in Europe which have been just in the last year or so been opening up.
Good.
So they're all starting off with a pallet here and 2 pallets there and things like that. But at least they're there. You've got a presence.
Right.
And Spain started that way. And suddenly, right, Spain, they're great gin drinkers in Spain anyway. But a lot of those Eastern, they're white spirit drinkers, which is a good start.
Yeah.
You know, at least they understand.
Exactly.
A bit of proper drinking. It's one of those things. So, yes. Yeah, so, and it's one of those things within a recession, you know. But I think what people are tending to do is they're going for better quality. Mm-hmm. It's a strange thing that the higher quality stuff is still going well, and then we've got all these issues in England about minimum price for units of alcohol, which is, it just puts the bottom end up all the time. So which is
and then you just move up.
You just move up with it a little bit. Yeah. So that's
because otherwise you cease to be a high price.
That's right. And you've got to have that differential to be that high end. You know?
Exactly.
And I always get this believer of being. And I had a hotel in London, and just after 9/11, when everything was no one was flying, no one was coming to London. And I was actually I was inexpensive on my room rates, and I thought, I doubled my room rates overnight. I just doubled my room rates. And for the next year, it was pretty disastrous. But then it built. Within a couple of years, I was getting the 90-odd% occupancy at double the room rate I had before, with a much better customer base. You know, more loyal. Meant the whole thing was another, because it was a lot of time, you're too cheap. They always think you're cheap for a reason.
Right.
It's a very difficult one to get right. But, you know, if you're actually expensive and you're good, then that's fine. If you're expensive and crap, they won't give you another chance. But you've got to be... I think it's all into value for money, really. If you give anyone value for money, it's fine. You know, and that's pro. People don't mind spending the money if they're getting what they expect for the money.
And in your product, they're getting what they expect because, first of all, you got this unique water.
Yes, yes.
And then what else?
And I think it is the length of the distribution, the distillation process, you know. And I think those are important things because you can easily do what they call the tea bag. There's all manner of, you know, but that's something which it doesn't come cheap. And so, you know, we're on a nice margin, yes, but on the other hand, you know, you don't want to, we used to have a problem with supermarkets in England where they would discount it like mad, and we actually decided to take it out of the supermarkets because it was devaluing the brand, because everyone else is saying, well, if they're going to discount it, we'll discount it, or then we want, and then it would have been a
right.
So
just
that was
slide
yeah,
to the
it was
bottom.
A, you know, you've got yeah. to try and keep a brand integrity. And you know, it's like we don't pay for listings, and things, which is a big thing, you know. So you know, sort of that, which is something which we're particularly against, because the next person comes along, pays a bit more, and gets it, and you're out the back door, and you just give them $5,000 or something.
Exactly.
I think that's it's yeah, it's just not a good system.
There are some bad practices.
There are some.
That's
yeah.
one.
Yeah.
Fortunately, in the United States, that practice of paying for shelf space is illegal.
Yeah, in England, you
doesn't
see,
mean it doesn't happen.
No. And it can happen
illegal.
In other ways.
Yeah.
But I think in England, I mean, a new club opens and they say, well, if you're going to be the pouring gin, you know, here's £5,000 or £10,000 or something, and, you know, for 2 years you'll be the pouring. Normally it's vodka, that's where the big payments came in, because every club, so that was in the VIP rooms, it was a bottle of vodka at £400 a go or something, and so it was worth their while. But that was a very serious, you know. But they can do it. It's you know, they just call it a listing fee,
and off they go.
You know. But yeah, here I think you give sort of marketing sort of products and things like that. Same thing. It's another thing. But it's I just really believe that that's why we worked a lot with very good bartenders or mixologists, as they're called now, that we worked with in London, who really did like the product, and they would be the ones who were saying, "Have you tried?" And promote it to their, you know, to their customers, and that just builds slowly on that. And I think, and then we do quite a lot with them when we invite them to things, and we have days out, and we have, you know, because they would like to have, you know, a bit of fun somewhere.
Sure.
But we don't do it the other way around by putting, because actually never really goes to the barman anyway. It's going to go to the owner or someone. All that stuff doesn't get to the
guy on the
coal face, as they say. So you know, and I think they like being, and also, they know a lot more these days. You know, they know the crap from the good. You know, it's changed
do.
A lot. It's, yeah, right, it's always a lot of smoke and mirrors and everything. So in general, they've got a better understanding of their whole world. But yeah. You know, it's
good.
It's still just a drink at the end of the day,
and that's a good thing. Well, good luck to you.
Well, thank you very much.
You know, hopefully you'll get that 200,000 cases within
right.
a couple of years.
Yes, and we'll come back and have a party.
Come back and have a party.
yes.
And I'll try your product after 5 o'clock.
Yes.
Actually, tonight after about 8, because I'm doing something where I have to be public speaking at,
right.
at 6:30. So.
Oh, you should go keep yourself, yes.
You know, so one of the things I learned very early was you don't...
No, that's interesting. So, but you live in Washington, D.C.?
I live right outside of Washington.
Okay, yeah.
I live in suburban Maryland. Right. You know, I'm secretary of the National Press Club across the street.
Right.
You know, and we have a general membership meeting tonight. So,
yeah. Oh, so that's
you never know whether it'll be up for your scalp or not. You know.
It's a shame, but my wife has actually gone to, her mother lives in Oklahoma, and she should have been here this time around. But so she lived here for about 12 years in Q Street, that's where I met her. So I used to come over quite a lot. But, you know, I said I probably still come over once a year for 4 or 5 days. Right. Still got friends over here. So I really enjoy coming here. It's nice. It's a good city. I mean, I think with all cities, you know, you probably get used to it and you get bored with it and all the rest of it. So, you know, it's still, you know, for me, I still enjoy it.
Well, we think Washington's still a good city.
Yeah, I think it's sort of... I
mean, except when the World Bank is meeting, at which point, you know, all bets are off.
Yes. It is a civilized city, isn't it, really?
Yeah. I mean, it's got a lot to do and a lot of museums and all those
things. I know, the whole
things.
I mean, and I said, you know, every time I've been married for about 10 years now, when I used to come over for weeks, every night was another, you know, party that in England you wouldn't be going to, because a lot of them were obviously political or legal or something. But they were still fascinating, you know, you've got a good mix of people, you know. And a lot of, you know, that was the sort of part, whereas in England it was a bit more, you know, way hey, let's, you know. it's a different sort of scene, really. Not that it doesn't happen in London, obviously it does, but here I think it's a lot more sort of, you know, focused on proper networking too, you know. Yeah. They're all out for a reason.
There's nobody in this town who goes out for anything other than a reason, I don't think.
No, where I think in London, the reason is secondary to most people going out. You know, that's not something.
The reason in London is just to go out and have
just
a party.
Just have a good time, get laid or whatever, and all that sort of world out there. But, you know, I'm sure that happens here too, but it's probably there's a business reason as well.
In most cases, I would say so. Well, good. Well, listen, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
I think I've taken enough of your time. I don't know who else is going to come by and see you, but I definitely wanted to do that.
Yes, I'm pleased you did.